Well, Evangelos Marinakis hasn't been in his seat for over 5 minutes now. Has he seen enough?
And welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Ian Bilton.
Hello.
And no, Terry DeBella. No, he's not here this week. He's not been sacked, don't worry. I've not just wielded the axe. No. It's not like that here. So yeah, it's just me and Ian here, but we've got plenty to talk about, haven't we, Ian?
We certainly have. Yeah, it's been a busy week, hasn't it?
Yeah. Busy week, busy couple of days. But that's because football never sleeps. People make decisions, and they make quick decisions. And you have to, because it's a fast-moving world, and you can't stand still. You've got to move like a shark, haven't you, really? If you stop swimming, you sink, don't you?
I'm not sure what happens when sharks stop swimming, but I would imagine it can't be good.
It can't be good for sharks. Famously, sharks can't stop moving, because it's how they breathe.
Yeah. It's quite a tiring existence, that, then, isn't it?
Yeah. It's no wonder they're so angry.
They are bloody angry animals, aren't they?
Good to imagine the amount of coffee they have to get through. Well, yes. Anyway, welcome to Marine Zoology Chat. No, it's not. It's the Sound of Football. And yeah, this week, well, there's only one show in town this week, isn't there? Poor old Big Ange, who you basically fired last week, didn't you?
Did I? It's my fault. Well, I don't think that Marinakis is going to be a fan of the pod, because we've had some opinions about him, haven't we, over the last few months?
You certainly have.
I mean, I don't think I'd be flattered that if he was listening to us and took a decision based on listening to me, I'd feel very bad for Ange if that's what had happened. But, you know, the results weren't there, were they?
It was part of a very, very busy weekend. And a great weekend for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it. It may have been difficult for non-Arsenal fans to watch Fulham versus Arsenal, but I certainly enjoyed them winning 1-0. Winning another game with a goal coming from a corner. Yeah, this is a perfectly acceptable way to win games, isn't it? Not conceding a shot for the second game in a row. I think this is perfectly fine from Arsenal. It's not boring at all, is it?
Well...
Is
you
it?
Say that. Well, no, I mean, keeping the number of clean sheets that Arsenal seem to be doing week in, week out, I mean, they've only conceded 3 goals all season.
Yeah.
And I know we're only 8 games in, but, I mean, it's only 3 goals. They're doing incredibly well, and there's a pack behind them that aren't necessarily... Well, City are firing quite well, but they stumbled a little bit at the start. But, you know, Liverpool seem to have lost their way a little bit, I think, haven't they? Because there was another header, wasn't there, at the weekend, where big old Jerry Maguire popped up with his enormous bonce and killed off Liverpool. But before we go on to that, how confident are you on Arsenal's chances this season? Does it feel like this is their season?
It feels like they're in a good place. It really does. I mean, it feels like they've got all the things going in the right direction.
Yeah.
Mind you, City look good now. They had a little stumble at the beginning. How good they actually are, I think we'll have to wait and see. I'm not entirely sure that they are capable of going on those runs that they did a few seasons ago where they would just go and win 20 games in a row. But Arsenal are doing everything they need to do. I think where they've struggled for them in the past is trying to break down teams that go with a mid-block. Teams like Fulham, teams like Newcastle. And they've struggled against those sides because they've had to push numbers up and then they ended up getting hit on the counter. And it's been a perennial problem for Arsenal, going back to Wenger's time. But I think now, with this whole sort of concentration on corners, which does seem weird. It seems very, very weird that we seem to be able to convert so many of them. But I think it gives... opposition sides who think, right, okay, if we have an organised mid-block, low-block, then we will hit them on the counter. But now it's almost like Arsenal start a goal up. They don't, because they tend to score more goals in the second half. But just seems that something has changed. But I think at the moment, I'm still waiting for them kind of to be found out or for things to change. Usually you have this thing every season, don't you, where referees are a bit tighter on certain rules. Last season it was restarts, wasn't it? And Arsenal paid at that because they got two players sent off for second bookables for delaying the restart. Haven't seen it again since. And I think Arsenal were the only ones that really suffered from that. But I think this season you might see that whole thing about they've been really tight on grappling at corners. And if that eases off a little bit going into the season, then maybe Arsenal would get fewer goals. I'm not sure it will, because Arsenal were scoring loads of goals from corners last season as well. We've got the depth now as well, which is so important. It means we can play games without Odegaard and not think, well, where's the creativity coming from? Of course, you know, injuries could hit any team, and Liverpool are seeing the problem with that now. Who can say really whether or not this Arsenal side are going to win it? I think they are rightly favourites at the moment, because given everyone else who could possibly win it, there's more question marks over them than there is over Arsenal. So I think by process of elimination, yeah, I think Arsenal have all the ingredients there to win the title. Whether they will or not, you know, there's still 30 games to go. So plenty of twists and turns coming up, I think.
Indeed.
But it was a great performance against Fulham. And yet another performance where Arsenal got points where they dropped points last season. So I think at the moment, out of the games that they've played, they're 7 points better off in the same eight games.
Right.
So things like losing at home to West Ham, losing away to Newcastle, drawing away to Fulham, all these points are suddenly just coming back to them. So on that form, you're going to see that Arsenal could end up with a very big points tally. It's only really the disappointing result has been the one against Liverpool. And I wonder, actually, whether or not how much that performance against Liverpool was down to the fact that Liverpool went in there with the mindset that they didn't want to lose it, rather than throwing the kitchen sink at trying to win it, because that's what they've been doing in the last few games and it's not been going well for them. Yesterday's performance against Man United was insane. It was an absolutely insane last half an hour. And you look at the XG on that game and it was ridiculously high. I think that both teams got over 2.5. 2.5 XG. But it was that sort of weekend. Villa were entirely outscored on XG in their win over Spurs. Leeds out XG'd Burnley and lost 2-0. It was just that kind of weekend, wasn't it? And well, Sunderland's game, that was a bit bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I thought Sunderland played very well, against the side that are bottom of the league. But you'd expect a team that's in form, I mean, they're in form for Sunderland, to do well. But, you know, we went 1-0 up, and then the second goal, which was calamitous, I felt sorry for the Wolves players. He scored an own goal from outside of his own area, which was crazy. Sunderland were trying to play the ball from left to right across that player who was coming back to cover, and he just hop, skipped and jumped and smashed it past his own goalkeeper, which was joyous, and cue some wild celebrations at the stadium alight. But I suppose when things are going well for you, you know, things like that do happen. And obviously there's a flip side to that. When you are in the position that Wolves are in, and Sunderland have been in that position, you know, many, many times in the last few years, it's the type of thing that just happens, isn't it? You know, the freak will happen and the ball will fly in. Yeah, so Wolves have got their work cut out. They're starting to look like they might get, I wouldn't say cut adrift, but they've certainly got some work to do, because they did kind of have spells in the Sunderland game, but just not enough to cause any kind of real threat. So they've really got their work cut out to stay in the division this season, I think.
They do. It doesn't look great for them. I mean, yeah, they had a terrible start last season and then they went on a really good run, but they just don't look like they can get it started at the moment. But you look at that bottom three at the moment and you think, I would not be surprised at all if that is the bottom three at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think it feels like Burnley at the moment are going to be fine. I mean, beating Leeds, I thought it was a great result for them, but they haven't done amazingly well, but they've got 7 points on the board.
Yeah.
So they're doing all right. Forest are in a real world of trouble. But I think West Ham will probably get themselves out of there. Nuno's there now.
Maybe. It is tight down there. So there is going to be a relegation battle this season. It's something there hasn't been for the last couple of seasons anyway. not without point deductions, adding a bit more spice to the to the mix anyway. And who knows? Maybe there'll be more point deductions at some point this season. Who can possibly say?
Well, exactly.
Okay, well, let's talk about Forest then, because they lost at home 3-0. And within 20 minutes of the final whistle, it was announced that Big Ange Postecoglou had been sacked. So it probably happened a lot quicker than 20 minutes. It just, that's how long it took for the whoever does the social media to put out the statement. Was that a surprise? As soon as the third goal went in, I thought, nah, he's not surviving the weekend. I didn't think that he wouldn't even make it to the 3 o'clock kickoffs.
Marinakis is ruthless, and he's got a manager that's come in and just not delivered for him. But there's a few things we need to probe, I think, on that. Bearing in mind that he was in for, what, 39, 40 days, whatever the stat is, 8 games. And there's an international break in the middle of that as well.
Yeah.
And he's trying to get to know his players. Obviously, that is a highly pressured role at Forest because of the nature of the ownership, the fact that there's an expectation they're going to do well. I mean, they were favourites, or among the favourites, to win the Europa League at the beginning of this season.
Mm.
And that's the interesting thing about all of this, actually, is that, you know, they've gone from a situation where they were close to getting Champions League football last season. They just fell short. And you started to see the cracks emerge within the club, not within the players and the team, because I thought under Nuno, they clearly were. You don't finish seventh in the Premier League and qualify for the Europa League if you're a bad side. But when Marinakis came on the pitch that time, you know, it was quite clear there was something not quite right at that club. And that was the kind of first slipping of the veil, if you like. But what's interesting about all of this, I think, is that you've got Nuno, who was in there last season, had a pre-season. Some players left, some players came in. And I know that was a source of some of the discontent with him anyway. But you've got a counter-attacking side under Nuno, who is then dismissed because he's fallen out with Marinakis. And then you bring in Ange Ball, which just seems like, I mean, a crazy decision, a really, really crazy decision. So that it was a kind of a perfect storm. You've got a manager who has probably not got the players that he wants, that they're going to do this front foot, high pressing, highly attacking game that Ange Ball is. He doesn't have the players to allow him to do that. And he's in this pressure cooker where he's expected to deliver results straight away, which is unfair on him. But, you know, he knew what he was getting himself into. I don't understand why he was selected, and I don't understand why he accepted. It just does not make sense to me, and we've seen that play out. If you'd given Ange some more time, but it needed to be a lot more time, then things might have been different. Maybe a January transfer window in there might have changed things around. But I mean, no matter which way you cut it, though, that's an awfully short amount of time that he's with that club. But I think that is because of all of the reasons I've just gone through. I think if he'd picked up a couple of wins in that, then I think he'd still would have been and the head on the chopping block just a few weeks later. I mean, it's just the wrong decision to bring him in, the wrong decision for him to go there.
Yeah, it is a litany of mistakes there, isn't it? But it does make you think why it actually happened and the process of it happening, because you've got Nuno getting sacked a week after the transfer window closes. So what is actually going on in his head? And I know that the transfers are done by Edu now. He's the sporting director, football director, or whatever you want to call it. And now, of course, there was friction between him and Nuno, so because they had different ideas of how they wanted to play. So did Edu have a say in the manager? Look, I'm buying these players. You'd be better off with a manager like Postecoglou. So I'm going to buy you players to match, which he obviously didn't. And we're going to get rid of the players that are more sort of Nuno players. Maybe. Or is this just Marinakis comes in 2 days after the transfer window closes, says, I'm fed up of this, I'm bringing in Ange. I met him in the summer at some drinks that the Greek FA were doing. Mm. And yeah, he seems like a great bloke. Let's get him in. And because of the autocratic nature in which he runs the business, because he does own the business, despite the fact that it's in blind trust, apparently. So yeah, he just says, let's get this guy in. When everything that you've built up for over the summer during the transfer window is having Nuno in charge. And then all of a sudden you completely flip it up, put Ange
in the role. And yeah, it just doesn't make sense at all. And you think, well, okay, what stupid decision is Marinakis going to make next? Because that's all it can be now. It's got to be his decision to hire him. It's got to be his decision to fire him. And whoever comes in next is going to face the same thing, aren't they?
Absolutely. I think it'd be... I mean, we know there's one person in the frame. We'll talk about him in a minute. But Dyche aside, any manager that would consider going to Forest under that ownership needs to look at themselves. You know, football management is a highly pressurized job. We know that. But when you've got someone like Marinakis at the top, where you just do not know which side of bed he's going to get up from, that can't be a place where you're going to be able to foster a winning mentality, a togetherness amongst the team, when you just know that it's just, you know, from the top to the bottom of the club, this climate of fear. You know, if you've got someone autocratic like that, that's not a nice place to... I mean, we've all been to places like that. We've all worked to places like that. And it's awful. It's a shame because it felt like Forest had everything. They had absolutely everything towards the end of last season. And the scale of the fall is... I can't say it's not entertaining, but it's become a soap opera. It really has. Yeah. Because, you know, for Forest to be where they were and now going to be about to appoint their third manager.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just madness. Madness. Really
yeah.
is.
Yeah. Because this sort of thing didn't really work out for Watford at any time when they were doing this, did it? That's not the model you should be following. So Postecoglou was the worst possible appointment there. And obviously appointed because he was available. Are we thinking that he fired Nuno purely because Postecoglou was available and he could put him in? Which makes it even worse, doesn't it, really?
Well, if that is the reason, I never thought of it that way. I thought it was because Nuno was openly saying that there was problems with the relationship with Edu and with Marinakis, which he was.
Yeah.
It was taunting them, wasn't it? Come and sack me. Yeah. Come and pay me off. I don't know. I think that there's clearly, I mean, Marinakis and Postecoglou have clearly got a shared background, haven't they?
Mm.
They met each other, as you said, during the summer. And Postecoglou just won a trophy in Europe.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel that when I first became aware of who Marinakis was, you know, when it became clear that they weren't going to qualify for the Champions League. So I think he wants a nice bit of European silverware at Forest. And who wouldn't? But I think that maybe that was a little bit behind the decision to bring in Postecoglou as well.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he wins stuff in his second season. Unfortunately for Forest, it might have been games. The only thing he looked even remotely like winning in his second season for Forest was maybe the playoff final, if they were lucky.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, he's going to go. We're not going to see him again for a while, are we?
You're not going to see him in the Premier League again, I don't think.
Yeah.
I'd be surprised if a team in one of the top leagues would touch him now.
Yeah.
Which is a real shame because he brought a splash of colour to the Premier League. It was a mad season last season when he was at Spurs, but it ultimately yielded some result. The league position was dreadful. But yeah, I think that he's not going to show up anywhere big, really, is he? The worst decision he could have made.
Well, I guess he could do the media circuit. Graham Potter did that, didn't he? So he could do the punditry circuit for a little while. Because Potter's not available now. He's got himself a job, believe it or not. He's now the manager of Sweden or international football. Maybe Ange could go into that. Or is he just going to go off to Saudi or the Turkish league or something like that?
He's a big name, so that's the type of thing the Saudis like, isn't it?
Yeah.
He's 60 years old now.
Yeah.
He's had a colourful career. He's had a lot of success. I think we shouldn't forget that. But you're right. He could go off and make some money over in Saudi. But if it was me, bearing in mind that I haven't been a professional football manager, but I think just being a pundit would just be great. It's like no pressure. Just turn up, talk about something you know loads about and get paid loads of money for doing it. So, it's a shame, really, because he's a character it's hard not to like.
Yeah, and so they're likely to replace him with Sean Dyche, the English equivalent of him, basically, aren't they?
This is the strange thing, though. Sean Dyche plays a highly disciplined and organised defensive counter-attacking game, just like Nuno does. So the chances are that Dyche will come in and turn it around, which is what he's brought in to do, obviously, to turn it around. But it's funny, I saw a headline earlier and it said that Sean Dyche was close to agreeing a long-term, and there was almost an emphasis on the long-term deal with Forest, because you're not going to go there and I'll take a gig till the end of the season.
No.
Because, like, you probably won't be there by Christmas. So, yeah, he's trying to make sure he's looked after, and that, which is absolutely his right to do.
Yeah.
But I think for the reason we've just said, I think he'll do well at Forest. I mean, the Forest too good a side to be where they are. Clearly, I mean, we've talked about why they're where they are. Mm. But yeah, Sean Dyche is good at turning teams around. We've seen him. He did the same at Everton when they were in trouble. And they had, I mean, you talked about points deductions earlier. That was a season where they had points deductions.
Yeah.
And he managed to keep them up. And he's got solid experience, having been at Burnley for all those years as well. Yeah, he is the right appointment. Probably the appointment they should have made 40 days ago.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not so sure.
You don't agree?
I think anyone taking that role is playing with fire, and I just don't know how well he's going to do there. Yeah, it worked out okay at the start at Everton, but then he was taking over after Frank.
Mm.
But it didn't end well, you know, being sacked a couple of hours before an FA Cup match.
Mm.
Same thing could happen this time around, couldn't it, in January?
Well, yeah, he's got experience of that, which is...
So, yeah, I just don't know how well it's going to work. And the thing is, the whole thing of flipping the team around again, going from Nuno to Ange, then going back to Sean Dyche. Yeah, maybe it'll work out, but I think the rot is going a lot deeper in that club. But who knows? Maybe they can come up with some results, but he's really got to hit the ground running, isn't he? Who have they got coming up in the next few weeks?
Well, they're playing Porto, who are currently top of the Liga Portugal, on Thursday in the Europa League. Then they're playing Bournemouth. Third place Bournemouth.
Third place Bournemouth, yeah.
They're playing third place Bournemouth, who had a cracking game at the weekend against Palace, who don't really concede goals. Bournemouth went there and scored three, conceded three as well. But that was a mental game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Proper game of football. Anyway, they've got to go there, and Bournemouth are a great side. And then they've got Manchester United, who are now brilliant.
Officially brilliant. Officially,
officially brilliant.
Yeah, yeah. Now that Ruben Amorim has managed to win back-to-back games for the first time in his time at the club. Yeah, they're officially brilliant. So having Man United come down to the City Ground, that's not going to be easy. Yeah, I don't know if Dyche will be in there before the week. I certainly think he won't be in there before the Porto game, but no. He'll be pushing it to get in there for the Bournemouth game. I did read somewhere that Marinakis was contemplating being in the dugout as caretaker. I took that with a pinch of salt, but
yeah.
My word, can you imagine that?
That would have been great,
I mean,
though.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly got the ego for it, isn't he? I saw a great picture as well, because Maresca was in the stands, wasn't he, for it, because he was serving a red card. And Maresca was only about a dozen seats or so away from Marinakis. And Maresca's going mad, celebrating like crazy when Chelsea scored one of their many goals. And the look on Marinakis' face as Maresca's going wild, giving it limbs. It is an absolute picture, really is. So, yeah, so maybe if Dyche can't sign on the line before Thursday or even before the weekend, then we might be seeing Marinakis in the dugout. That'll be mad, won't it?
That will be absolute box office. Graham, I really hope that happens. Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So when do you think he'll be sacked then? I reckon once Forest don't make it out of the Europa League phase and go out the FA Cup in the third round.
January next year, you reckon?
Yeah, maybe if he makes it to that. Or maybe when they lose to Wolves at the beginning of December, give Wolves their first win of the season.
Well, he's going to start. I mean, he's starting under pressure, obviously, because of where they're at. But
yeah.
The three games I mentioned there, I can't see him getting any points from those. I do think that Dyche is the right appointment. Whether he's going to be able to turn it around, I think he probably will. But let's have some fun with it.
Yeah.
And assume he's not going to. But he's not getting anything from those first three games. And that's going to put him right under pressure straight away.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Good luck, Sean. You mad, mad fool.
You're right what you said about what sort of coach would take this job. But they're all mad for it. I've seen Marco Silva's name quite seriously connected with this job. And yeah, he's probably taken Fulham about as far as he can with the level of investment that Fulham are willing to put into it. He's got a very nice, stable job there. But if he wants to move on, he wants to be seen as someone who can do something else, and especially take a club into Europe, you can see how a coach who's really should be at the prime of his career might think, I need something, I need to push myself, and maybe how far can I push myself at Fulham? So, yeah, while I say who would take that job, I think the fact that they're in the Europa League, I think, yeah, is that little bit, does change things ever so slightly, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does make it a bit more. And to be fair as well, it's not like Forrest are afraid of spending money either.
No.
So if you're looking at, like, they're in Europe, they're one of the biggest names in England.
Yeah.
And they've got an owner who does put his hand in his pocket. So they're, you're right, there are many reasons to look at it favourably, but there's one large reason why you shouldn't take it. It's a difficult one. It must be really frustrating being a Forest fan.
Yeah.
Knowing that you've got all this potential, but you've just got this mad, mad owner that, well, potentially could drag them down.
Yeah. I think with someone like Silva, though, is that he's in a similar situation to Glasner and Iriola, isn't he, really?
Hmm.
These three guys are wanted managers. So they could go to decent jobs rather than go to Forest, couldn't they? I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? Why take the Forest job when you can just bide your time and actually go somewhere they aren't going to be chucked straight in at the deep end with all the sharks?
Yeah, there are plenty of big clubs,
yeah,
not just in England, that change their managers. Well, all clubs change their managers nearly all the time. So you're right, they could hold out for a club with a decent pedigree that are a bigger fish than Forest. Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, what they really need is they need the merry-go-round to start turning. When one club takes a manager out of a decent club, then they've got to go, right, okay, well, we'll go to that decent club rather than go, right, we won't go to the crazy club that's just sacked their manager who just needs to put the flames out.
Mm.
But yeah, I think if I was Marco Silva, I'd bide my time. A better job is coming for him, I think.
Yeah, completely agree. He's far too good to have his talent wasted somewhere like that. He could be managing a seriously big club soon enough. He's got a great reputation and has done really well. So yeah, it would be wrong of him. I know he's been linked. I think he's the manager that Marinakis really wants, but he's just not going to get him, is he?
He does shop a lot in Portugal, Marinakis. If you look at his Olympiacos side, there's a lot of Portuguese players there. There's a big Jorge Mendes link there. Maybe there is something there, but no, don't go, Marco. Do not go.
Don't do it.
Stay at Fulham for now, okay? Going back to Graham Potter, though, what do you think about that, about him going over to Sweden, becoming an international manager?
Now, that actually was a bit of a shock. Well, is it a shock in that he'd hopped to international football?
Yeah.
I mean, I know he has a background with Sweden, still got a house there, apparently, which is handy. But they're in a bit of stuck at the moment under Sweden. They're not going to qualify by winning any more games in their group, I don't think. But there's a special way they can qualify, isn't there, Graham? I think you can probably fill us in on that.
Yeah, it looks really unlikely that they're going to qualify for the playoffs through the groups. I think they can still qualify as being the winners of their Nations League group, but I think that gives them a really tough draw. But if you're in it, you're in it, aren't you? And they have got decent players. They've got Isak and Gyökeres up front. All right, neither of them are scoring very many goals at the moment, but they've got decent players. They've got decent players who can score. And yeah, mind you, losing to Kosovo, it doesn't really get much worse for him, does it, really? So yeah, I think he's got a bit of a free hit, I think, with that, going into that Swedish side, because they can't get much worse than they are at the moment. Of the four games in their World Cup qualifier, they've got 1 point. So yeah, pretty hopeless. But yeah, he's managed in Sweden, so he speaks the language, I think. So yeah, and likes the place. So yeah, Graham Potter could be the next Roy, couldn't he?
He could. Well, why not? Why not? He had a terrible time at Chelsea, as we know, a terrible time at West Ham. But yeah, he was pretty good at Brighton, and he's well regarded across the, you know, the kind of football community. So you're right about it being a free hit. You know, he can go there. He's got a very short-term contract, isn't it, just to get them to the World Cup effectively. So why not do it? if he manages to pull it off and gets them there, then, you know, his stock will be right up there again, which is good to see. I know Terry's he's not here, so fuck him. But Terry's not the biggest fan. But I've always liked Potter.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how he gets on with that role. But what will we be watching this weekend, I wonder? Well, Ruben Amorim, you know, he's winning games for fun at the moment, but Danny Welbeck is scoring goals for fun, and he goes back to Old Trafford this weekend. Man United versus Brighton is a Saturday evening game. That's going to be a game of football, isn't it?
That will be a game of football. Brighton are a pretty impressive side, I think. And yeah, you see it. I mean, Danny Welbeck, he was on loan at Sunderland years ago when they were in the Premier League last time. So yeah, he's I like him because of that. But he's a quality player and he's still banging them in, and it's amazing. But you know, Man United seem to have they turned a corner? They won the last two games. They beat Sunderland, which they're expected to do. But then they beat Liverpool, which they weren't expected to do. But I don't think it's a coincidence that Radcliffe had said that Amorim's job is not under threat. And, you know, he said that, suddenly they beat Sunderland and they beat Liverpool. So maybe they are turning a corner.
Maybe. I don't think they are. I think there are some real problems with that club. But they're top half, I think they're only 2 points behind Liverpool at the moment now. So, yeah, maybe it is going to be not a terrible season for Man United. But I think a great test this weekend against Brighton, at home to Brighton. And I think at least the mood will be better at Old Trafford anyway for that. Well, up until the time when Danny Welbeck scores anyway.
Yes.
It will be anyway. That's the 5:30 game on Saturday. Arsenal play Palace on the Sunday.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. Ish. I think it's going to be a bit tough watching. That's at the Emirates. That's going to be fun. I think if Palace come out playing like they did against Bournemouth, then we could see a few goals. That might not be a 1-0 to the Arsenal, that one. There could be some goals involved in that one.
Yeah, looking forward to that one.
You're covering Hearts v Celtic, aren't you? Hearts runaway leaders of the Scottish Premiership at the moment, aren't they?
They are. They are 5 points clear at the top. Most people don't tend to look up at Scottish football unless you happen to be Scottish, because it's usually only Celtic or Rangers. They're doing a bit Celtic and not the team that they usually are this season, and they're still sitting in second. But yeah, that's going to be a cracking game. As Terry said last week, Scottish football's become interesting again. It's got a bit of jeopardy.
7 games to watch across the weekend. We write previews of all of them. And if you want to see what we think of those games that we think you should be watching between Friday and Sunday, then get along to sofpodcast.com, click on the link for the weekend box set, and subscribe. Subscribe to our Substack, and you will receive it in your inbox late-ish on Friday lunchtime. Late-ish.
Ish.
Ish, ish, ish. But it's there, and you'll be able to read it well before Preston North End versus Sheffield United kicks off on Friday evening. Because that's our Friday night game, which I'm looking forward to. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Jan Belton, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Gee, you painted a pretty bleak picture there.